Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, July the 1st, first day of July. I think we're just about halfway through the year. This is day 182 of 2013. So sometime today, we will be literally entering into the second half of 2013. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Ileana Johnson Poe. You know, we're going to mix it up this week. This is like in school, you know, where you would mix your class, the class that was supposed to be on Friday, you're going to have on Monday. Well, that's kind of the way we're going to do it this week. We're going to be talking to Dr. Johnson on Monday rather than Friday because of the holiday. So we're going to get into the American economy. A lot of interesting things happening in the American economy. Some interesting things also happening in Europe. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. My book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, available in print as well as Kindle. You can go to the website and order the book. You can also order the book and request a special copy, meaning we will dedicate the copy for you. If you have a brother, a sister, a father, a mom, a grandfather, a grandmom who you would like to dedicate the book to, we'd be happy to do it. Just send us the request on the website, and we will be more than happy to do that. On this day in history, a couple of interesting things that happened on this day in history. 1863, this was day one of the Battle of Gettysburg. It went on for several days, of course, but this was the day that it started 150 years ago today. And a happy note, we say Happy Canada Day to all of our friends up in Canada. It was on this day in 1867 that they signed an arrangement with Great Britain. I'm not exactly sure what how it happened, but it was on this day that Canada became an independent country. Of course, they're part of the Commonwealth. They're not like the United States. We're not. They are part of the Commonwealth, but this is the day they celebrate Happy Canada Day. So we say Happy Canada Day to all of our friends up in Canada. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Dr. Ileana Johnson Poe right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's say hello to Dr. Ileana Johnson Poe. How are you?
Hello, Silvio. I'm fine. I guess happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Happy Canada Day. Do you have any connections with Canada?
Well, I do. I write for Canada Free Press.
There you go.
And my editor is a Canadian. So, and most people who read my articles think that I am Canadian, but most of the writers for Canada Free Press are American.
That's right. That's exactly right. You're right, because when I first saw your articles on Canada Free Press, I had the exact same reaction. I said, "Well, this lady must be Canadian." But no, I guess it's a conservative vehicle up in Canada, right? Canada Free Press?
Yes, it is. There are fewer conservative vehicles in Canada, and Canadians are afraid that we're going, meaning we, the United States, are going their way, the socialist way. So they want to maintain the last bastion of freedom, if at all possible, that is the United States.
Interesting. Well, tell me about your book. I said you're an author and an economist. How's your book doing?
The book is doing still wonderfully, UN Agenda 21, Environmental Piracy. And, of course, I continue to write about it. It's the best education for $2.99 that you can get about what's going on in your local government with your property rights and your zoning laws. And I think it's catching on because I just saw an article today in the Examiner, the top 15 signs that global warming is a fraud. So that's very encouraging.
Well, one of those signs may very well be that the temperatures are actually getting cooler.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I just saw something about the temperatures. Actually, it was in, of all places, in The Economist. I think I sent you that article last week, that the temperatures are actually, you know, cooling off rather than warming up. But anyway, we're going to talk a little bit.
I like the number three one, which says global warming, it really is the sun, comma, stupid.
Right.
So, well, that was cute.
Yeah, that is. 15 reasons why I guess I'm trying to think of one of the 15 reasons, but I might just come up with one, and that is that anytime Al Gore makes a movie about something, you've got to think that it's probably not real.
Well, then that would be number 16 sign that global warming is a fraud.
Right. Yes,
we'll
that has
list.
To be one of them.
Yes.
And also the hypocrisy of many of these people. I mean, you know, they act like, you know, they're holier than thou. They make all kinds of self-righteous statements. But then when it comes to their own travel and their own behavior, I don't know too many of them who practice what they preach. I'm sure some do, but a lot of them really don't practice what they preach at all.
Yeah, that would be number 17 sign that global warming is a fraud. We'll add it to the list.
Right. Well, if we keep going, we may just come up with 60, you know, one every minute. That we do the show today. We're going to get into a little bit of Europe, what's happening in the United States, President Obama declaring war on the coal industry and in many ways American prosperity. I want to talk a little bit about Professor Samuelson has a interesting article about cheap money and how it doesn't buy a good economy. But I want to begin with Europe, because I found this to be rather interesting. You know, we've been talking for several months. In fact, every once in a while I chat with Jose Guardia from Barcelona, Spain, and we talk about what's happening in Europe, and we all know about the unemployment and apparently inflation going up right now in Europe. I was not aware of that. But what I found more interesting than anything else was this article in France, where basically they're telling the young people, you know, go somewhere else if you want to have a future, because there's not one here. They didn't quite put it the way I just said it, but that was the idea, to go somewhere else and look for a future. I find that really interesting that a country would be saying that to its young people, but it's probably true, you know?
Well, probably true. As a matter of fact, I think President Francois Hollande was actually cornered. He was interviewed on a network talking to 20-somethings, and he listened to the story of some young woman who was a graduate of one of their most prestigious institutes. And this woman was moving to Australia because she couldn't find a job. Well, the reason she can't find a job is because socialists are not very good at creating jobs. They're just good at giving away other people's money and creating more welfare. And when he was forced with a pretty straightforward question, what would you say to her if you had a person in front of you who can't find a job and lost all hope? And Hollande, of course, well, I tell this young person that France is your country. You know, the typical patriotic BS that's not true, that does not translate into job creation. And as a matter of fact, Angela Merkel, she actually told the youth in her country that they need to become accustomed to moving elsewhere in the EU in order to find jobs, because
right.
The EU is one huge country with 27 other independent nations where you can seek work.
Right, yeah. It was Angela Merkel Chancellor of Germany, who actually, you're right, she got this started a couple of weeks ago, making those remarks. And maybe this is why they were asking President Hollande that question. Maybe it was indirectly because of those remarks that the Chancellor made. But I just want to say something.
Also, there are 3.6 million young people across the European Union who are unemployed. The French young people have gotten used to having a really high unemployment, 25% or more for nearly 30 years. And also, overall, the EU, there are over 19 million people who are currently unemployed. And yet, when they report inflation, for example, in the EU, they say, oh, the core inflation, which excludes food and energy prices, just like we do, because, oh my goodness, those are just too volatile. It shows a 1.2% inflation rate, but it's much higher. It's 9% or more, just like it is in the U.S.
Exactly. You're exactly right. But I thought President Hollande of France, I like that name, Hollande of France, was very hilarious today when he was very angry with the United States that we're spying on the EU. I mean, these people are really, not just him, but several other Europeans are pretty upset that, you know, we've been spying on them as if somehow they don't do it on us or we haven't done it on them before. You know, it's kind of comical to watch their reaction. Don't you laugh a little bit when you watch their reaction?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because everybody knows that countries have spied on each other for years and years, and even those that claim to be friends, they still spy on each other. So that's a basic assumption. So, yes, it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
However, being that France is such extreme socialist country, most recently their conservative leader, Jean-Marie Le Pen, she's considered a patriarch of the far right or the French far right. When this guy, you sent me an article by him, Félix Marquard, published an article in which he encourages youth to move, she said, his co-author Malud is encouraging French youth to leave so his cousins can move in their place because Mr. Arcour is of North African origin. And I'm not sure that this is such far-stretched statement. It's funny on the surface and kind of shocking, but it's not so far from the truth because France has been overrun with North Africans and Middle Easterners because they have such a multicultural disaster immigration policy.
Right, exactly. They also have generous benefits too, right?
And, oh, they do. Know, that's what encourages this
right.
Out-of-control immigration because they, as soon as they come in, they sign them up for all benefits. And if it's middle of the month and they ran out of benefits, oh, no problem. Just come in and we'll give you some more. As long as you live in your ghetto and you leave us alone, here's some more money.
Right. And if for whatever reason we miss a check 1 month, we'll just burn down the city then.
Yeah, we'll burn 5,000 cars.
Yeah, we'll burn 5,000 cars just to show you that we're really, really dependent on those checks. But it is interesting because another article having to do with young people, obviously having three sons in that, you know, early 20s age bracket always causes me to read articles about young people. And the article from the New York Times about the young people who feel so helpless and isolated, they go to college, they come back home, now they're living with their parents because they really cannot find self-sustaining work. And it is really, obviously we don't have the same problem the Europeans have. We don't have it to the same degree that they have, obviously. But it is a problem, you know, that this Western capitalist system is not creating jobs for young people, and that's got to be a problem at some point. I mean, it's got to be a social problem at some point. We see it in Europe, as you said, millions of young people without without jobs, and now they're getting benefits. But at some point, even the benefits are not going to be sustainable. So this is really, I think, a time bomb. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, it is a time bomb because we are trying to run our own economy by according to the European model. We're promising more and more benefits and welfare to our young people. And I remember Nancy Pelosi when she said, well, you don't have a job, you know, just move home, take your unemployment and pursue your dreams that you've had in your life, you know, be artistic, be creative. So the government is actually encouraging young people not to work, and they're not really creating jobs for them. And because of all their policies that they're putting in place, preventing this capitalism from creating jobs.
Exactly.
And you take Obamacare and all the others, you add them to the mix, and it becomes even more disastrous. And here you have all these young unemployed people, some of whom are low-skilled. Now they're going to have to compete with 11-plus million newly amnestied illegal immigrants. Of course, it hasn't passed completely through, but when it does, because I'm sure it will, you will have, they say, a minimum of 11 million. I'm sure there's going to be much, much more than that because there's such a thing as chain migration. So that's why people, young people, and they are the ones actually who voted for socialism, for this utopia, because they were told, they were indoctrinated in school that, oh, capitalism is so bad and so evil, so they happily voted for the promise of socialism. So here we are in the second term of socialism, and the economy is disastrous compared to the past. And the country is tremendously in national debt, more so than we were under the previous presidents. And there's no good solution in the future unless they actually adopt a not a crony capitalist plan for the country, but a true capitalist ideas, inject them into the economy.
But we used to have that, didn't we? We used to have that at one time, didn't we, that kind of a system. We used to have something called capitalism in the United States. That's why all of us came here and why we became the most prosperous nation in history. I do have to say something about Obamacare just quickly, and that is that, you know, your book, Echoes of Communism, I think that's going to be rivaling Agenda 21 here pretty soon, because Obamacare using librarians and students to promote Obamacare, those are echoes of communism for somebody like you. They are for me. That's shocking, the idea that they'd be using librarians and young people, or kids, I guess. Did you see that, or did you hear about that?
I saw that. That's just incredible. And it's really sad because I've heard from various sources that because he is cutting $719 billion from Medicare for the next 10 years, so that's about $71.9 billion per year, a lot of people are beginning to be refused medical treatment. And why is he cutting this money from Medicare? To fund Obamacare. And people did not understand this when they voted for Obamacare so enthusiastically. So now they're being turned down for cancer treatment because it's too expensive. It's
right.
Already happening.
It's already happening, and already projections of premiums going up substantially next year.
Gone up in many cases.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I went to fill a prescription today, and I was told, we're sorry, we can't fill this prescription because we cannot get this medication anytime soon. This is a government pharmacy that cannot get this prescription. So where am I going to get it from? Fortunately, I don't have to have this particular prescription, but there are some people, a lot of them, thousands and thousands, who probably depend on it. What are they going to do? People are going to start dying. People who diabetes, some of the drugs are in short supply already. In hospitals, they have shortages of anesthetic drugs. They've had
it
for
months
and months.
That's what I mean, echoes of communism. That's what it sounds like to me. You know, echoes of communism. You go back, and I mean, obviously, you lived under it a lot longer than I did. But this is what happened in those systems. You know, there were all kinds of shortages of basic goods and services, and that also included medical supplies. Let's talk a little bit about the American economy, and I want to begin. I want to talk about what happened in the first quarter of this year, where we had another one of those famous revisions, you know, where they tell us that the economy grew at 2.5, and then they come back a little bit later and they say, oops, no, it wasn't 2.5, it's now 1.8. But the point is that 1.8 GDP growth is simply not enough to create jobs. I mean, that is simply not enough to create jobs and not only take care of these people who have been laid off, but some of these young people who are coming into the labor force. So there's your problem, 1.8 GDP growth in the first quarter. I think that's pretty bad that we have that kind of a growth rate.
Oh, it is. It's actually very, very bad. And this is like the third adjustment. The first two were just estimates. They were 2.5, 2.4, and now it's 1.8. That's very low. And as I said, there are many, many variables that contribute to this, one being the Fed, you know, buying our own debt to the tune of $85 trillion a month in order to maintain low interest rates. So we are devaluing the dollar by doing so. We're going to be hit with even higher inflation at some point. Then when Bernanke came out and said, well, I may have to taper down on this, the market responded obviously very quickly, and it went down, the stock market. Gold had plunged as well. Today rose. It was actually the biggest quarterly so far. It rose. So the fact that the Fed's policy stayed at this level, it encouraged a lot of speculating and a lot of trading on the stock market, and the stock market really did not reflect being as high as it was at 15,000. It did not reflect the weak state of the economy, which has been stagnant for quite some time.
Yeah, and, in fact, you mentioned Bernanke, your chairman Bernanke, and I want to talk a little bit about an article that I know you like Professor Samuelson a great deal, and so do I. I mean, he's a great writer, great economist, and he wrote an article, and he basically said that cheap money, which is what you're talking about, we have these interest rates down at zero practically, that cheap money cannot buy a strong economy, and that is the point you're making, right? That, you know, at some point it has to be real. If it's not real, you're not going to get prosperity, right?
Yeah, and the point he makes in this article, which is very important, that the monetary stimulus, which is what our Federal Reserve has been engaged in alone, cannot put economies on a path to self-sustaining growth because, Mr. Samuel says, the roots of the problem preventing such growth are not monetary. And I mentioned one being Obamacare. Another one is not allowing drilling. Another problem is the XL pipeline, which was nixed by this administration. Another one being the very stringent EPA regulations and the effort, the war on coal, so-called dirty coal. Another one is putting billions and billions of dollars into renewable energy, that is solar and wind, neither one of which have been extremely successful and cannot replace the energy generated by the coal industry. And they are having to abide by all such restrictive, ridiculous EPA regulations that some of them have had to shut down.
Yeah.
So you cannot create jobs in such circumstances. So it's not the cheap money is not the solution. People are scared. There is such thing as consumer confidence. There is such thing as business confidence. And, of course, they are risk averse. Consumers don't want to spend because they know it's a bad economy. Companies don't want to hire because they don't want to invest They also, because they don't know how much tax they're going to have to pay, how much their penalties for Obamacare compliance or non-compliance, how much insurance. Then we also have such a huge national debt that it's like a household. You have so much debt that your entire income has to concentrate on paying down that debt, not, and you're unable to do anything else. So it
right.
becomes very burdensome. So
right.
As he says, firms and families become deleveraged.
Now, I think the whole point of cheap money or stimulating the economy is something that has been done before, right? Isn't this the idea of John Keynes, the great economist, that when there was a recession, the government would spend money, just sort of pump a little, you know, something into the economy, a little action, I guess, into the economy, and that would bring the economy back. I mean, that's been kind of the way we've done it for many, many years. So, but what's
well,
different
now? Well, that works short term. That
right.
works
okay.
short term, but we're talking about he's been doing this for a while now. You can't just do that, keep spending and spending like drunken sailors. Our national debt is the biggest threat to our national security because we don't have any money left over to do other things. In order to do that, we have to create money out of thin air, which he's been doing at the rate of $85 billion a month.
Right. So this is the problem. The problem is that we went too far with the stimulation, right? We almost it's almost like giving the patient a little bit of sugar, but then getting him, you know, giving him sugar over and over and over and over again. That
until
now
the patient dies.
Until he dies. Yeah, exactly right. Until he dies. So it's a problem we're going to have to deal with. But you know what's interesting? And then we're going to take a break and come back. Talk about coal, and I know you've got a couple of articles that you've written this week you want to share with us. But what's interesting to me when I watch all of this as a citizen is how disengaged from reality President Obama seems to be about this issue. I mean, it's hard for me to believe he's not being told what you're saying to me right now about the danger that this poses to the economy. So either he's being told this information and he doesn't care, or nobody's telling him what's going on. But it is really remarkable to me that we have a president who doesn't talk about this problem that you just outlined.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, being president is a very difficult job, and there's so many things that you have to know and be in control of. And I think it's almost an impossible feat for any one individual, and I'm not trying to defend him. I'm just saying that a president is as good in addressing the problems of the country as the people around him who advise him. And I'm not sure that the people around him have given him the true picture of the economy.
Well,
he makes, you know, wonderful speeches all the time and promises this and promises that, but all of the stimuluses that have been passed through to the tune of billions of dollars, none of them have worked. They were wasted money. I've never seen any roads built or some roads were repaired. I haven't seen bridges built. I haven't seen jobs created in the teaching profession as he had promised. I think
right.
there was a lot of propping of union salaries, teacher unions, jobs, and so forth, people who in turn donated to the coffers of the Democrats.
Right,
so
exactly, yeah. Yeah, it was very. I guess what you're saying is very little was invested in productive activities.
Exactly. Money was spent, but it was wasted on a grand scale. And I've heard one of the talk show hosts call Obamacare Castro Care, and I thought that was a very good and apt comparison. And then another talk show host compared Mr. Rubio, and no offense to him, but a Machiavellian political opportunist. And I think this is very true because these are just very expensive distractions that make our economy that much worse. We
yeah.
don't need Obamacare. Yes, we needed changes to the current medical system, but by the time we're done with Obamacare, there will still be 30 to 40 million people without health insurance, and God knows how many more will lose theirs because they can't afford to pay the increased private premiums, or they fall through the cracks in their pursuit to get on those exchanges.
No, you're exactly
right. Once you
do, yeah.
Are you going to get good quality medical care? I don't think so. I'm frightened even now, although I live in a, not far from D.C. Most of the time I wonder, will I be able to find a doctor who is actually trained in the United States, or is it going to be some third world country? No offense to anybody, but they are not trained as well in those third world countries, and I don't want to be treated by somebody like that.
Right.
When they come here, they have to go to medical school for 2 more years, and then they have to pass the licensure board. And most of them can't do it, even after taking two more years of medical school, because their English is very poor, and their information and everything they learn is, in their countries, is not up to par with what we do in the United States.
I tell you what, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about President Obama and coal. And we're also going to talk about a couple of your articles. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. We're doing our weekly chat with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Foe. We're doing it on Monday because Friday being the day after the holiday. So we're going to take a break. We're going to hear from my friend Aaron Clary. And then we'll be back with the second half of our show.
The Canto Group is a recruiting firm located in Dallas, Texas, that specializes in the placement of executives and engineering professionals with companies throughout Texas. If your company is seeking quality candidates in the fields of general managers, plant managers, sales, CFOs or controllers with a manufacturing background, production manager supervisors, engineering specializing in mechanical, manufacturing, industrial, electrical, safety, or quality engineers or designer drafters, feel free to contact our team regarding your company's future or current openings. Contact Silvio Canto Jr., email the Canto Group at AOL.com, or visit our website, thecantogroup.com.
Well, that was obviously not Aaron Clary. That was actually me that we were talking about. But we'll do our – I hit the wrong button, as they say. I hit the wrong button. We'll do Aaron Clary's at the end of the show. Of course, Aaron, the author of the book, Worthless, the one that we just heard is, of course, the Canto Group, which is the company that I have, and we do recruiting here in the Dallas area. Let's get back to Dr. Ileana Johnson-Foe, have you come up with any more reasons? We had 15 when we started the show, 17, I think. We came up with a couple more. Did you come up with another reason to add to our growing list of the global warming is a hoax?
Yeah, I have a good one. The EPA continues to use data from admitted frauds, so-called scientists who are in a consensus.
Consensus is supposed to be an agreement, right?
Right. That's no science. A consensus is no science. That's fraud.
That's
and when
right.
you have data that you are tweaking just to verify your hypothesis, that's not science either.
Well, it's like coming home and your wife says, there's a consensus that I'm pregnant. Well,
I like that one.
Well, you're either pregnant or you're not. There's really no such thing as a consensus when it comes
exactly.
to pregnancy, right? And I think it's kind of the same with the atmosphere. I mean, it's either one or the other. Consensus is just when you have consensus, when it comes to science, consensus is more like confusion.
Yeah. Well, I'm being called now a climate denier. That's my profession, I guess. Well, but, I don't deny that the climate changes. It has been changing for 4,000-some-odd years that we know, and God knows how many millions and millions of years before that, before recorded time. So nobody is denying climate change, but they switched to global warming since they saw that they were losing that argument in a big way, so they switched
yes.
to climate change. Well, really, it does change. But now you're saying that you're kind of marking the water, that the weather predictions and all these bad weather have something to do with the climate change. Well, maybe so, but they're only using one variable in this modeling that they use, and that's CO2. And that's one
right.
of my articles that I wrote about, which prompted you wanted to talk about the president's war on America, war on coal. Well, that's really war on the economy, because when you're destroying, coal produces, what, 49% of our energy? When you're destroying that, you're destroying a lot of jobs.
Right. And, of course, all of this comes from this rather hilarious speech that President Obama gave a week ago on climate change. I mean, as if we didn't have other problems. You know, he gives a speech on climate change, and it was a speech that was met with a lot of criticism, particularly from, in fact, a lot of Democrats, like this fellow Senator Manchin from West Virginia, who came out and said, hey, you know, I don't need this war against my state. But, you know, this president seems to have a war. You know, I'll go further than coal. He has a war against America. He has a war against prosperity, against free market capitalism. And it is amazing to me. Maybe it shouldn't be amazing to me. We should have known he was going to be this way, I guess. But it is amazing to me that he has continued to sound like this even after he became president. You would have expected this kind of stuff in the campaign, but then he would moderate once he became president. He really hasn't. He's just as bad as he was when he was a candidate.
Well, can we really get all the energy that we need from wind, the sun, and the soil? I don't think so. First of all, they've been blowing up dams, so we can't get as much hydroelectric power as we did before. The wind, even nobody wants them in their backyard because they are so unsightly, and they actually make a very annoying hum, over 80-some decibels, if the wind passes 30-some knots. And that's when these windmills work the best, but apparently they make people sick who live around them. They're unsightly, and apparently they chop up a lot of birds. And I haven't seen a car with a windmill on it last time I checked. And then, you know, solar panels, you have to have a lot of land to display these panels, which means that you're taking land away from agriculture. What do you do at night? You still have to have backup electricity, which is derived, by the way, from the so-called dirty coal. And all these nitwits who drive around in these electric cars, how are they going to power them at these power stations that are always empty, by the way, in D.C.? The electricity comes from coal.
Right.
So
no, exactly. You're exactly right. But yet they keep having this war on coal, and it is really amazing to me that it happens that way. But I mean, he seems to have declared war on coal, on nuclear energy, on just American prosperity in general. He thinks somehow we can have prosperity by having everybody work for the government. I mean, I don't know how you can do that, but that seems to be his model. Like you were saying before, he really likes the European model. I just wish somebody would tell him it doesn't work.
Yeah, and he keeps saying that the carbon dioxide is toxic. Carbon dioxide is not toxic. It is a nutrient for plants. And as a matter of fact, greenhouses buy generators that generate extra CO2 in the greenhouse in order for their plants to grow better and faster. I found some research that has shown through satellite images that concentrations of CO2 are at their highest over non-inhabited areas. They are not from man-made activity because a lot of it was over the Amazon, which, to my last check, is not inhabited but by a few tribes and a lot of critters. And
right, there's
snakes.
A lot of nature in the Amazon.
Right.
Not a lot of skyscrapers.
CO2 is not toxic. I mean, we drink it in soft drinks. We drink it in mineral water, seltzer water. It is not toxic. Of course, if you're going to sit there and inhale, you know, certain mixtures, perhaps it is, but CO2 by itself is not toxic. And there's no such thing as carbon, toxic carbon in the atmosphere. And nobody talks about the water vapors and, you know, the planet is a large percentage water. Nobody talks about the oceanic currents that have an influence on the weather, of course. And nobody talks about solar activity and solar flares, which do have an influence on our temperatures and on disastrous weather events. We've had those prior to 1900s when there was little industrial revolution, so to speak. So how was that created by man?
No, I know, and this is one of the but they repeat these things and people believe them. And,
yeah, they do, because people don't read. People are just utterly ignorant. Some of them are utterly stupid, and some of them are utterly naive.
Right, and they all get to vote. That's the other
thing. And they all get to vote, exactly.
They all get to vote, which is a scary.
And they have no idea who they're voting for, and most of them don't even know who the Speaker of the House is, and have no idea what's going on in the country, but they vote for the coolest guy.
For the coolest guy, and he is hip. There's no question about it. Although he doesn't look as cool as he used to, though. I think he doesn't look quite as cool as he used to a few years ago. I it's interesting when you look at him physically these days. He doesn't look as youthful as he did at one time. I guess we're all going to get older eventually.
I think he would be the coolest president in the history if he would just let people drill. He would create jobs, and he would develop coal energy and, of course, clean coal energy, and he would open up that XL pipeline. You would be amazed how many jobs will be created overnight, and if he would drop that Obamacare.
No, you're exactly right. You're exactly
that's a
right.
Sinkhole.
He is the reason. No, you're exactly right. He is the reason that this economy is stuck the way it is. He is the reason. He is literally he's holding back what could be a very, very significant recovery and a very significant period of American.
And I'm not sure it's him. As I said, he's surrounded by advisors, and he listens to them. So.
Well, I mean, you're right. The president is never completely – I mean, you're exactly right. It's a difficult job, and you have to depend on people around you. But there is something also to be said for coming into the office with certain principles that you believe in. And
sure.
I don't think, for example, you had to explain to George W. Bush a free market economy was better for job creation than a socialist economy. And so I do think that people have these beliefs and principles when they come into office. The problem with this man, with all due respect to the president, is that he came in with no real-world experience. He never ran anything, had never managed anything, and the fact that he was never a governor, I think, also prevented him from getting a lot of the kinds of experience that would have benefited him as president. You know, whether you're a Democrat governor or a Republican governor, you got to deal with economic development, you got to deal with unemployment, you got to deal with businesses coming or leaving your state over taxes or regulations, and at least you walk into the office with a certain amount of practical knowledge. Well. We have a few minutes. I want to make sure we get to a couple of the articles that you sent me this week because I think they're very interesting. And we have, by the way, a link to your website if people want to follow up on your articles. But tell me about the first one. You sent me a couple of them.
Well, I wrote one about carbon dioxide, if it's really guilty of this so-called global warming, and it is this global warming settled science, and of course it isn't. And I've provided a lot of sources that show that actually the temperature may come first and then the CO2 concentration, indicated that something else causes the temperature to rise on the planet. But ultimately, there hasn't really been a overall increase in temperature of the planet. There has been a cooling in the last 16 or 17 years. And one of the reasons is that these weather stations, most of them are located real close to urban areas, and they record just highs and lows. And that's not a very good description of where we're going in temperature, because everybody knows in urban areas, because of all the asphalt, there's always higher temperatures in that area. But we've had, 30,000 different stations around the globe, and there has been a cooling. And then I talk about all the phony baloney claims that the polar bears were dying and they're drowning. And as a matter of fact, in the UK, Mr. Gore's An Inconvenient Truth, his video has been banned because most of the stuff that he uses in his PowerPoint presentation is not accurate. The population of polar bears have increased 5 times, and the penguins likewise at least twice as many. So these are not accurate descriptors. And of course I get all this hate mail from the left and from all the global warming proponents, and they really attack me, and because they say I'm not a scientist. Well, I do have a doctorate, and I do know how to read a study and the conclusion of a real scientist who has not manufactured the data, and I try to report it to the best of my ability.
You're a climate denier.
So I'm a climate denier. Yes.
Yeah, you're a climate denier. You just, you just can't see it. I mean, it's all around you. Don't you see these polar bears drowning? Don't you see all these polar bears floating on the Atlantic, you know,
they're
coming down?
They're actually very good swimmers, and they can swim a long distance. So they're not likely to drown. But anyway, that's a different
story.
We've
got to tell Al Gore that polar bears are actually better swimmers than him.
I don't know how they filmed the polar bears on this little piece of ice, but apparently it was done, I don't know where I read this, it was done at a zoo. And some of the data he used was actually from the 1920s. But anyway, I found, when I was researching this article we're talking about, I found a quote by Michael Crichton. He was my favorite fiction writer. And I'm not sure, even today, sometimes he was for global warming and sometimes against global warming proponents, and he made fun of them. But I found a quote, and kind of you be the judge, whether he was pro global warming or against. But I found it so profound because it described exactly what these global warming alarmists do say or are. And here's the quote: "We're energy sinners doomed to die unless we seek salvation, which is now called sustainability. Sustainability is salvation in the church of the environment, just as organic food is its communion, that pesticide-free wafer that the right people with the right beliefs imbibe." End of quote.
Right. Well, that's it. I think you're exactly right. But see, you just need to subscribe to that religion. That's your problem.
You need
to subscribe to that religion
so
that you can see it the way they see it.
Yeah, well, I'm a Christian. Thank you. So I believe in God, not in Gaia. Well, anyway,
that's
my
right.
Second article was I entitled it "Virginia is for Food and Farm Freedom Lovers." You know, kind of playing on the "Virginia is for Lovers."
Sure.
We've had a very strong opposition to UN Agenda 21-driven agenda through the non-governmental organizations such as the Sierra Club and people like that, who are actually trying through ICLEI and local zoning board of supervisors telling farmers whether they can or cannot farm on their land. They just want penny loafer farmers, which is someone who owns land and they just grow grass and run a few horses on it. People are being told you can't grow vegetables or you can't raise animals because your neighbors don't like it. And if you do, you're going to be fined $5,000 a day. So the Virginians have put together a resolution, calling on the Republican Party of Virginia to support state legislation and local ordinances that are consistent with each farmer's right to determine what is best for them what constitutes farming, farm life, the best uses of his or her own farm, as long as they respect their neighbors, and what's market pay for their labor, and repeal any state laws and ordinances that are inconsistent with their resolution, with our Constitution and what our founding fathers meant when they said that Americans are free to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. And hopefully next year we'll be able to defeat them and pass the Bonetta Bill, which is the Right to Farm Bill. And this
is
happening, by the way, across the country. This is just one isolated case.
No, you're exactly right. You know what I think we ought to do? We ought to take all the liberals in the country, all the global warmists, all the UN agenda people, and we should put them in a spaceship and, like, send them up to space and just let them float around the Earth for the rest of their lives. Yeah, they can just float around the Earth for the rest of their lives, and we can just wave at them every once in a while. Hey, how are you doing? And but just wave at them for the, because these people, I mean, it's like they just cannot leave us alone. I mean, they have to be sticking their noses, whether it's in our business, whether it's in our lives. I mean, and then they do it with such deception. And I like to close today by taking you, I don't know if you saw this little incident that here in Texas last week about the abortion issue. They took, you know, the overwhelming majority of people in Texas want to restrict abortions after 20 weeks. And, you know, they had this little charade, they, you know, with all these mobs coming into the gallery and literally making a mockery out of the legislative process. But this is how they do it. They have no respect for anybody. It's all about them. And if they don't get their way, you know, they do whatever they got to do. It's really sickening. That's why I want to put them in a spaceship and just have them float around the Earth for the rest of their lives.
Well, my question is, what are they going to eat? Some of them have no idea where
they
their
can
food
eat each other.
Is coming from.
They can eat
they
each other.
They don't realize that less than 3% of Americans, of the labor force, actually produces food for the rest of us. And, you know, nobody wants to live in a polluted planet. And, yes, there have been in the past excesses and accidents, and we tried our best to clean it. And sometimes the Earth itself cleans up disasters. And other times we have places that cannot be cleaned for hundreds of years, such as the Chernobyl accident with a nuclear power plant. But you know, they're just totally disconnected as to where their food is coming from, where their energy is coming from, and how much is going to cost them to have heat, electricity, air conditioning, and gasoline once all these things are put in place that restrict all their economic activities.
Well, as my late grandfather used to say, these people just need a kick in the butt. Because we just got to just get them out of the way. Just, you know, get them, you know, just kick them in the butt, because they are really becoming very obnoxious with all their ways. They want to mess with our Constitution. They want to mess with our private rights. They, you know, they just want to mess with our lives. And frankly, you know, after a while, you get very irritated by these people. But I guess, you know, we're going to have to coexist with them, I guess. But it is really... it is really amazing that we have people like that around us. They don't seem to appreciate the United States and what the United States is really great for. The United States is not great because of our welfare state. We're great because of our capitalist system. And that's what we're celebrating on July 4th coming up. You know, this system of freedom, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the economic system that came from that. That's why we're great. But they don't seem to know that. You and I know that, but they don't seem to know that.
Well, the only thing that keeps America still alive is this common popular culture, which is what happened in Rome, too. And there's a very good article that Victor Davis Hanson wrote, if the listeners have time to go read it, in the Washington Times, which is entitled, "The U.S. is Coasting on the Fumes of Past Greatness Following the Roman Road to Ruins." And it's very true, because as he says in the article, there are few Americans who are actually worried that the leaders have lied to them or misled Congress and the American people without any consequences. And they don't know their history. They can't distinguish this First Amendment from the Fourth Amendment. And They don't really worry. They don't know who Washington and Jefferson were, and they were just some fogey old man they don't really care about. So there's a vast disconnect between the elites and the common people, and therein lies the problem.
Right. That's a very good article, by the way, by Professor Victor Davis Hanson. I enjoy his articles a great deal. Well, I want to wish
yes.
you and your family a very happy July 4th. You're in a part of the
Thank
country
you.
Where there's a lot of celebrations there in Virginia. I want to wish you and your family the very best, and we'll come back the week after. We'll come back on Friday as usual, and I look forward to your input and all of your economic information. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you about the American economy. I know I learn a great deal. I know the listeners learn a great deal today. And I think you're a grandmother now, if I could say that here at the end, right?
Yes, you can. I'm a grandmother since Friday. I have a beautiful grandson, 7 pounds, 14 ounces, Hardy Anderson, and he's gorgeous.
Well, if he ever comes to you talking about global warming, do what my grandfather used to do. Hey, let me kick you in the butt and bring you back to reality. Okay.
I hope I'll be around then.
Okay.
Well,
right.
Happy Independence Day, and until next time.
Until the next time. Happy July 4th to you and to your family. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with a closing commentary right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. What a great chat. We always enjoy our chat with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe, who's now a grandmother. So I wanted to take this opportunity to congratulate her and her family for that wonderful addition having a new baby in the family. It's always a lot of fun when a new baby comes in. Now, I haven't had that experience yet, but maybe one of my sons will one day call me on the phone and say, hey, you're going to be a granddad. But, you know, two of them, they need to get married first. So why don't we, I want to get that phone call first about getting married, and then I want to hear about the pregnancy later. But everybody have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful day. We're going to be talking about Austin and this abortion dispute, this little abortion battle down in Arlington in our next, in Austin. I'm sorry, what am I saying? I'm getting my cities confused. We're going to be talking about abortion in Austin on our next show. We've got George Rodriguez is going to be joining us. Also, some ladies who are down in Austin promoting the pro-life movement. They're also going to be joining us. I just don't have their names yet because that's up in the air. We'll be talking about that issue as we talk about abortion down in Austin. Very controversial topic here in Texas. Everybody have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Texas, and we'll talk to you later.